Well, thank you very much for the nice introduction. I am Naomi Niake, coming from the School of Computer and Cognitive Sciences of Chikyo University. It is located in Toyota in the middle part of Japan. Thank you for this invitation because my work background is probably a little bit different from most of the keynotes that the speakers of the youth expect to see here. This is my short self-introduction. I went to University of California, San Diego from 77 to 82. That was a time that the Department of Psychology there were trying to convert itself into something new, and they were taking a lead to start the cognitive science movement there. And there are lots of interesting things happening, redefinition of psychology, redefinition of study of cognition, etc. I took my PhD in 1982, and my main work was on constructive interaction, how two people jointly solve the problem and come to a better understanding at the end of interaction. What I mainly found here is that interactive situations is not the shared problem-solving situation that you might think in the general sense of the term shared, but that's the very collaborative, including competitive situation where people has to reveal what they're thinking. In our term, it's externalization of the thinking processes, and those externalization forces the members to rethink about what they're thinking, and that reflection and restructuring of the knowledge leads the participants to a deeper understanding. So my work after this sort of is based on this notion and how we can use this strength of collaborative situations to lead people to better understandings and how we can take advantage of that. In 1974, we've kind of started in a international collaborative fashion, and probably the first use of what we didn't even have the term internet those days, but a computer connection for education application. We established network connection, what we named intercultural learning networks, which tied San Diego schools with Illinois schools, with Tokyo and Toyama, which is a smaller town in facing to Korea in Japan, and Jerusalem Israel schools, and sometimes the Mexican schools came in and so on. And well, that was a very text-oriented, just an exchange of messages, and we often had to rely on some postal services and other sources of communication in those days. But that was one of the precursors of, I think, the use of current technology to see how it's applicable for educational systems. And we found lots of interesting things. But I moved to the Japanese first Department of Cognitive Science in 1991 and started to take a closer look on how people really learn in these technologically enhanced situations. And I have been mainly involved in developing the collaborative learning courses at college level cognitive sciences then. And this is mostly the part that I'm going to talk as my research piece toward the end of my talk. But before going there, let me take a cognitive scientist's view on collaboration, and I'd like to go over with you what it is and how it works and what are the conditions to make it work or make it work right, because collaborative situations you can create, just make students gather and assign something, they would work collaboratively. But that does not necessarily mean that they would learn collaboratively or they can take advantage of that situation. So after sorting out those conditions to make collaboration work, I would like to go through with you some of the implementation ideas to make such conditions really work, how we can support, sometimes with technology, to implement those conditions. And I'll go very briefly toward the end of my talk, our current model course, our courses, and how we are evaluating this and where we are trying to go. So that's my general plan for the talk today. So I'd like to, without taking any more time, go into search of the definition of collaborative work. And here, in fact, we do in a laboratory lots of very minute level of protocol analysis or experimental laboratory type studies. But here, because this is a kind of this talk to lay out the general picture that I base my own research to people coming from a different background, I would like to take this opportunity to give some illustrated case as a story for you to think about. And this is a typical case that we might think of when we think about them, or when we hear a collaborative learning situation. At a nursery school in Japan, well, kids found out how to make ice collaboratively. This is just a very anecdotal talk, but just reflecting upon it, this case, as I'm going to tell you, involves lots of interesting features in it. The story goes like this. In one relatively cold February morning, they found their small pool frozen up during the night, and they had ice to play with, and playing with those ice pieces was fun for them. So there was the motivation, well, let's have ice every day. And one kid started to say, does the pool freeze because it was a little bit rainy yesterday? And this motivated the other kids to come up with lots of other ideas of how they would get ice. The teacher, in fact, is a very experienced person, well, took this opportunity and asked them, or just suggested them, that they can put some water in the bucket that they like, and put the bucket with water at the locations they choose, and just leave it there overnight, and come next morning and see whether their bucket had any ice in it. And the children liked this idea, and they did this many times. This activity lasted for 2 weeks. There are lots of positive and negative answers. Well, some students thought that the middle of the garden or the middle of the yard of the nursery school would be the best place to put the bucket, and he left it there and there was no ice. And some other kid thought that the pink bucket would work better than the blue bucket, so she used the pink bucket. Did not necessarily come right to her expectations every time she tried, etc., etc. And they got lots of different answers, and based on that there emerged lots of those hypotheses. Now I think water freezes when the wind blows, or the wind does not blow, or whether the bucket is outside or the inside, whether the bucket is kept in a darker place or in the center of the room, etc., etc. And at the end of the 2 weeks session or whatever, the spontaneous exploration of those kids, the kids conversed to some rudimentary conceptual understanding how they can get ice. Maybe temperature, maybe weather, but definitely the color of the bucket does not have anything to do with it. Something like that. So we call this a collaborative and rather successful learning situation. What's special with this class? Well, children were engaged in self-knowledge construction. At the end of those 2 weeks explorations, you can pick up any kid and ask, what do you think causes the water freezes? And the, most of the, every kid can come up with, well, the weather has to be, it has to be cold, something like that. So those are the knowledge that they constructed through those experiences without being told. So that's the part which makes this little anecdote appealing and interesting to us. But also, the children seem to have started to gain not just an accumulation of experiences, but some term, verbal expressions that they can talk about, not just pieces of those experiences, but as an integrated whole, or the conceptual intimation of their experiences, which we call as a conceptual understanding of the topic matter. Here, how the temperature is, how the ice is made, in essence. And this conceptual understanding has been talked about a lot in educational practices, and we put lots of emphasis on it. What is it, and why is it important? It's an abstracted knowledge of lots of different cases, for other times it may be lots of different experiences, and for a more of a physical, physics principles, and other more higher order conceptual understandings. We may be talking about integration of reasons and why it works and why it doesn't work when, and understanding of underlying mechanisms or conditions for when it can be applied and when it can't be, and things like that. Those sort of knowledge, pieces of knowledge, is thought of very important because they are usable outside of the classroom. It's not that the students remember to answer correctly to the term papers or the end of the term exams. But once they go out to the real world, once they have those conceptual knowledge and knows when it's applicable and so on, and why it's correct and so on, it's usable for them. And because it has that nature, it's sustainable. You can come back to the same kids or the same students a year after the class and ask what they know about it. And if they have that conceptual understanding, they can answer what they think, what it is. And because it's sort of an abstracted piece of knowledge inside of your head, it's portable. In the learning sciences terms, it may be called transferable. But you know when it's applicable, you know how to express it, you can try different forms of it, and you can try it to different places. And in an interesting sense, it's restructurable. If your knowledge is based on a very direct experience, your direct experience cannot be very easily or cannot at all restructurable. But because this abstracted knowledge is very often symbolized or verbalized, it can be scrutinized and restructured and can be reformed to start being applicable for newer situations. And those are, in effect, the reasons that we want to teach something to kids at school right now. We do not want kids to remember what we know in the form that we know, as they are. What we want them to do is to use that knowledge outside of the class and change that knowledge to suit for whatever will be coming in the future. So that's why the conceptual knowledge is thought of to be very important. But we all know, and I assume that a good part of the audience today are teachers or have something to do with teaching jobs, and we all know we just have to sort of admit ourselves that lecturing is not the right way to make students come to this conceptual understanding. It's doable to give verbal explanations, but does not convey, well, the verbal labels get into the student's head, but making students recite those definitions of principles does not assure them to be able to use them, as you all know too well. We can give experiential knowledge, but giving experiential knowledge does not form itself into an abstracted piece of knowledge. There needs some help to really get students into engaged in the active process of knowledge construction. And that's the direction, well, that's maybe the important, but one of the directions that we want to change the learning situations nowadays, with the help of technology, because the technology finally seems to let us to move into this direction. So to sort out the conditions that we want to aim for, let me go back to that ice making classes again, and I'm going to itemize what was happening there in a little bit more abstract terminologies. Well, they shared goals, everybody wanted to make ice. This is very important because based on this shared goal, the ice that I got in my bucket had to be something to do with the water which didn't freeze in the next person's experiment. If you take the very superficial structure of that ice making class and implement that in an elementary school without knowing the importance of sharing of this kind of goal, you can make a very competitive class. Now I want you to find out how the ice is made competitively. You probably don't say that, but if you let students competitively work, what becomes important for those individual students is to see whether their own hypothesis works and their own bucket comes out with ice next morning. Whether the bucket experimented by your classmate or not does not matter, because you are aiming for your building of own understanding, which couldn't have any shared goal meaning. And if you have these individually different ideas, there is no need, because there is no shared goal, to integrate those pieces. But in that class, that kid could easily also have different initial hypotheses. This was a clever part set by the teacher. Any kid who could have the bucket with water can put his bucket or her bucket at some location, which automatically became his or her initial hypothesis without not much thinking of the kid's part. But this is also very important because seeing buckets with small water, lots of water, put in different locations, visually that gave the other kids that there are lots of different ideas of having ice. And so those different ideas were also shareable for the kids in this class. And there are lots of different answers, and they were variations of the answer that the kids wanted to get. And all the answers were shareable for comparison, and there are teachers' help to see why do you think this bucket froze and that one didn't. And you can do lots of things, intervention in here, if you know that those are the variations shared under the same goal, and the kids have this motive to integrate those things. And this integration of answers require some abstraction, as you would be following. So this abstract facilities can come in variations again in this particular form, which must have been the added power of this classroom. So in ice-making classes, the abstraction were caused because there were variations of the answers to the shared problem, and there are also motivation for integrating those variations. And integrating shall require, integration require those abstraction. And there were chances for evaluating such abstracted theories again. So I colored those key terms in these collaborative sessions so that now I can be listed as conditions for effective collaboration. It seems like we need to put some shared goal for the classroom activities, and the individual should have some initial, or should, individuals should be allowed to initial hypothesis, and there should be variations of solutions which are put visible and scrutinizable and for abstractable forms for the entire class, and there should be some support and time assured for integration activities. So one way to make some successful, effective, collaborative learning situation would be to try to implement those support for each condition. So shared goal and initial hypothesis. What would be the way for you to implement in your class to assure that there would be some shared goal and the students are allowed to have initial hypothesis? Well, there are lots of small knowledge accumulated in cognitive science, cognitive psychology, educational studies, and learning sciences that we can borrow from. And whenever it comes to this kind of implementation and design of the curriculum, I think we should just look into everywhere to get any ideas that we think would be usable. The internet. This is an interesting thing to assure that there are shared goals for students' activities, and there could be some initial hypotheses. With the internet, you can go out of your classroom and you can let your student who may have a very peculiar interest or concern to learn to go out and try to find that similar-minded person. Those people may be available. Very often there are chances that he or she can find that who would be worrying about the same problem if the problem is very clearly stated. So this again motivates the students to clearly state what they want to learn and what is their problem. But once that base is supportable, internet can provide a very rich source for forming those virtual community of shared interest. And also, if those shared interested people come from different cultural backgrounds, that very often assures that from the very start, they can get a very different set of initial hypotheses. This is what we observed in our first initial attempt to use internet for international understanding and language studies under the name of Intercultural Learning Network, as I talked to you in my self-introduction. And also, the internet has the power to bring in the real-world problems into classrooms. This often helps students to classify, clarify, and clearly state what their concerns are. They may be interested in something, but they don't know what the problems are. And in those cases, they can go over to the internet and start looking around and start seeing how other people, and very often adults in real society, are worrying about the real problem and how they formalize their questions. Very often those adult questions are hard to understand, but that can also put students in a motivated situation to start learning about, to understand those questions. So those are the very free form of use of the internet, but this piece of technology has a lot to do to set up a shared goal, initial hypothesis condition in classrooms. But not going into those free form things, and we also have a relatively established practice in classrooms and follow that, and that is the Jigsaw method, which has been talked a lot in this. I heard this talked about in this conference and also in other conferences of computer use in education, and also this has been a big issue for the computer support for collaborative learning conferences and so on. Just to go over the things that you already know, but in Jigsaw method, the kids were assigned only part of the entire task. The one group may take responsibility to understand the first one-third of the material, called group A, and the other group B may take the second middle part of the material, and the other group C may be taking the final one-third of the material. Well, they know that they are given only one-third. And their task is, it's put at the beginning of the class, is to come toward the end of the class to form a new group consisting of members from different groups to put those pieces together to answer the question. So this allows in this form of what they call the jigsaw group that each person has, well, at the class of the top, they have a shared goal to understand this whole thing. And when they are gathered in this forum, each person has those initial hypotheses, which they gain from these, what they call those, an expert group phase. So that they know that those ideas that the other members bring in to the situation are different from theirs. So they have to take advantage of those, and they have to sort of accustom themselves to the notion that there are chances that they have to work on different pieces. You only know only a part. You have to ask the others to make those things as an integrated whole. And this can be experimented in very interesting many ways. to fulfill those shared goal, initial hypothesis condition. And how do you make sure that there are different variations of the solutions after setting those shared hypotheses and having students start working collaboratively? And many of the knowledge sharing systems are supporting this phase of collaboration. They very often ask students to put their ideas and modify them and work them in groups and put those group contributions to the board so that the other members can share. And from this line of perspectives, so that we can say that those record keeping of note sharing system is helping to make appear the variations of such solutions or the semi-solutions toward the real solution. But we can go further into details of keeping records of cognitive processes and make those cognitive processes or the process of making those variations of solutions available by externalizing them. And this is a kind of a brute force of making those one of the most commonly practiced but completely hidden cognitive process of reading in classrooms. This is an older form of the externalization system of reading process. What we have here is a stack of cards. For each card, they are printed a sentence from the material that they are reading. What they do is to move those cards and arrange them on the two-dimensional space. Those card sizes are changeable and the colors are changeable and other things. Let me just make this go forward faster. And you can change the sentences and put notes and arrange those and group them and things like that. And if we have our students or a couple of students read the same set of materials this way, suddenly the reading process become available for talk, for discussion. One person might want to put card C directly under card B because she thinks those two cards are very closely related, but the partner may not agree and say, hey, why do you just put that card directly below that card? I see there is a gap between those sentences and so on. So this is a kind of a very brute force to make those hidden cognitive processes externalized and available for discussion. But this is just one example of what we can do with the capability of record keeping of computational technology to help those variations of solutions or solution paths available for students to learn. The third thing that we want to support or just assure that the students do engage themselves in is the integration part. The weakness of lecture style is that the most of the integration effort of those learning materials is done by the teacher. The teacher spends a lot of time preparing the lectures to assure the main idea gets conveyed to the students. But that job of reading those materials and piecing them down and trying them to tie together and integrate, that's the part where those conveyable understanding comes to the teacher. And it, in a sense, that the students are sort of put off, kept away from the richest part of the learning which could occur in the classrooms. So we now have those shared goal and initial hypothesis, and the students are groping to read things and experimenting and coming with lots of variations of solutions. So we want to have students engage in this integrative work so that they can start abstracting their experiences, his experiences with the next group's experiences, and the whole set of contributions from the class so that they can come up with the decent formation of conceptual knowledge. And this is a very hard part. And what we have been experimenting is, because this is a hard work, the people would need some guidance. I introduced the basic notion of jigsaw, but because jigsaw has some structure to start with, there was an entire integrated piece which is cut into the third, and each part was given to the different groups in the previous example that I used. So maybe that we can use a bigger structure and show that to the students and help them see the direction of their integration should go. So when we teach the introductory course of cognitive science to sophomores, the second years in college, at the beginning of the course, that we show this kind of the map or the conceptual map as the guiding map for integration. And we tell them that we are going to read many things in this class. Well, I'm not going to read, but you're going to read many of the things in this class. And there are main themes, and then we're going to learn about intelligence and learning and knowledge. And because this is a cognitive science course and an interdisciplinary course, many people use different approaches to those themes. There are theoretical approaches or experimental approaches, simulation studies are also done, and there are many brain studies are coming into cognitive science. And also those research findings are applied and tested, and this is where the strength of the cognitive science comes. And after being given this kind of a map, the student may form a group of three and start reading to fill in the materials in one cell that this group guide took up the intelligence literature done by with an experimental methodology, and they can work in a jigsaw fashion, cutting those things into smaller parts and try to integrate and talk and make better understanding of the literature itself. But after these are done, and we can have students form approach group. So now we have three students. One read some literature on intelligence, the other read some literature on learning, and the other read something on knowledge. But they all worked on an experimental methodology. So now we can gather those three and ask them to exchange their literature survey and start understanding what the approach of using those laboratory-oriented experimentations. And you may be guessing what will be coming next, but if we can do this, we can also do this. And now we can gather the five students, all worked on intelligence literature, but each read papers from studies done with different methodologies. So one coming from, so one may be able to talk about the theoretical issues on intelligence, like what is multiple intelligence and so on. And they can start talking about how cognitive science approaches to the topic of intelligence and start forming the concept of intelligence and what will be left to be studied and so on. In the class, toward the end of the two-thirds of the class or something, we may be starting to see lots of different groups like this. And to do the final project, we can ask them to form a team of members who covered very different areas with different technologies so that they would be able to collaborate in the sense. This would give, we hope, some chance for them to start integrating the pieces that they've learned so far. So from a student perspective, one student may start reading about the critical period of language acquisition, LA. I just couldn't use the, for the space thing, I used an acronym there for the LA standing for the language acquisition. This is not a standard thing, but just bear with me. So this group read the critical period of language acquisition and how it's evidenced in brain studies and so on. The same person would read the language acquisition would start exchange ideas with the people who read the language acquisition studies with taken up with different methodology like simulation studies of language acquisition or the theory of mind and how it's related to language acquisition or whether the evolutional process of human being might have had any sort of influence of the type of or the form of language that we might have. This is a sort of a very hot topic in cognitive science, but it's very hot and it's still very freaky, but good for discussion. And at the same time, the student can widen her understanding of brain studies to be put into the group to talk about what other topics can be studied in the same approach, so that she may hear and exchange ideas with other friends who read brain studies on different topics like memory and emotion and so on. And as a project toward the end of this course, she may form a team to apply those knowledge that she gained from different literature so that as a team that they can evaluate a case of second language learning support system or something using the internet and so on. So this integration that we are also using a different technological piece of this is the area that we can look for the support that we can take in from technological support and the sharing node systems and lots of systems which helps students take a different perspective by giving a different representation of the learning materials has this capability of making something look different. That system helps students to see the same thing, to see the variation from different perspectives for integration. And we are using a very rudimentary functionalities of note sharing systems of linking and commenting, and but taking care to assuring some time so that the students can engage in those integrative processes during the coursework and also can talk about how they come up with those integration. The note sharing system that we have been using and we are revising right now is called a reflective collaborative note system, which takes some authentication first. And we have four small windows on the screen, and you can write notes. And there are individual notes and group notes. And it also has materials provided by the teacher. The biggest feature, this is just those note sharing things, but the biggest feature we have here is that when you bring up two different pieces of materials, notes or the teacher's materials, you can write comments on those links if you want to link those two together. And those comments show up on the next window to the notes. So this note has these links provided by the students or the others, and if you want to see what comes to this note, you can just click on this, and that click brings up the piece to the other window. So by having students work on this link making, what we can make visible and shareable for the student is not just the content of the notes, but how those notes are integrated by other members and how their own integration can become visible for the other students so that it becomes the contribution to the class. And I've covered the three sets of things, it was four but truncated into three, as the conditions that we want to support in the classrooms. But I want to add one more thing here, which is that to make those things happen, we do need some collaborative culture for the students. The teachers should understand what it means to make students collaborate And also, students should know what they can gain by this collaboration. Because as you may be sort of following my talk, you may be coming to worry, well, gee, this course may be a lot harder for students to take than the lecture course. For the lecture course, they can go their own pace and come to the class probably, if it's a college level class, once a week for 90 minutes or so and understand something. And if she understands everything, she can just come back next week. And if she doesn't, she can visit the lecture to the class and have 15-20 minutes discussion. Or she really doesn't understand the whole thing, that she may be given a literature that she should read, but that's how she goes. But for this class, that you're given just one-third of the paper and you have to read it carefully so that you can talk about, you know, it's a one-third, it's very hard to understand, but you are assigned that one-third, so you have to do your best to explain that one-third to the other groups, and after that there are different formations of the groups, and every time that you are grouped with people who have some different knowledge, so you have to start talking from the very scratch and exchange. And the notes under that note sharing system, and link those notes together so that the other students can see how you are linking them together. And you have to go to the other students' notes to see what they are saying, and you have to go to the other students' linking to see how others are integrating the whole thing. So to be able to do this, there has to be some cultural, social motivation that this is a way to learn for them. This isn't the easiest thing to persuade to the students who would be coming into this kind of situation for the first time. So there has been lots of talk about, in general, in societies that would be talking about collaborative situations, how we would, to start with, cultivate this collaborative culture. The Jigsaw, again, has a very interesting feature to it, because there is a brute force to cut the groups. And so you have to appreciate the other people have done their study. But what I call a constructive interaction is the case that whenever two people come together to start discussing, to come to share their understanding, inevitably each person has an individualistic understanding. So the Jigsaw is the start to make the differences apparent to the students. But coming through this Jigsaw experiences, we have been seeing in our department that the students gradually come to understand that it is natural for each individual to take a different perspective. If my understanding is different from the others, that's the strength of having that interaction. If the other person has exactly the same understanding, talking with each other doesn't give us very much. So Jigsaw can be used as a cultivator for collaborative knowledge, but it also is a little bit of a higher hurdle for the student, we've been seeing. So at the periphery of the cognitive science classes, we have been trying to implement some technological support so that the students could come into this collaborative culture more gradually. And one of the things that we have been using and seeing some successes, it also needs lots of improvement in the system-wise as well as in use-wise. This is a simple written board. The lecturer provides their lecture material into smaller cut-up sections like that. And whenever the student wants to comment on any part, and bring up those write comment window. And those pencil marks indicate that this line got some comments. And it may be a little bit hard for you to see, but if the pencil has more than one as a number, it means that comment itself has some responses, as you saw very quickly goes by in the screen. So this is a sort of a different type of record keeping of more or less a traditional practice of the students who are motivated to learn. After the class, some motivated student might come to your office and start asking you questions, and you maybe find yourself getting engaged in some deeper discussion that, of the topic that you couldn't cover in the lecture. And this was in fact developed by one of the students who had that tendency to do that. And he realized that the conversation is very interesting and informative and educational for him, but cannot be shared by the other members of the class. So we started to take that notion, and he took some initial role of implementing this into this system. So that now, this is the kind of the breathing board for those motivated students to share their personal experience with the instructors, with the other members of the class. But this also works. We are seeing this as a peripheral support, showing those interaction and what you can get out of those to the other members of the classrooms motivates those who may not directly come to the instructor's office, coming into and taking some small step of asking questions or putting comments on the lecture itself. So if we put this system in the first year students' classroom, there may be about 10 or less than 10% of the students who would see the strengths of the system and start using this. But as the course goes on, we tend to see the stable increase of the number of the participants. We explicitly ask them to come to this breathing board and check how others are doing. But just getting exposed to these ideas of explicitly commenting on others' comments and seeing some value to it motivates and makes up that culture of having these interactive collaboration is okay, for one thing, and two, is sometimes beneficial. Some questions are asked in a very sort of poor way, and that the other people may come to start worrying about the quality of those poor questions and so on. But here comes in the power of interaction, and often the students or the students who have taken this class before or the teacher itself can appropriate such question and change the opportunity so that he or she can contribute something which is not intended from the first. So there are those interactive powers that the students come and start seeing in this kind of a very simple system. And if it's put as is and ends at the end of the course, which may not work as a cultivator for collaborative college, but we have been doing this kind of thing for about 5 years by now, and we are seeing more and more of the need of integrating those technologies into the integrated curriculum. Teachers often think that they are assigned to teach courses A and B, and the other teacher who would be teaching C and D, there wouldn't be too much need for them to integrate those courses together. But in fact, they are, because the students are coming into 2-year or 4-year courses, and those are the people that would continuously taking those courses, and they should be taking something out of the prior course to the next one. But at least in Japan, those kind of overview of reformulating the curriculum for 4 years for one student, or better, to even try to cover what they will be doing after they graduate, that kind of perspective has not been taken very seriously. And that's a new thing that we have been seeing with the move of using technology for the education and so on. This isn't a very different view of classroom that you might expect to see. Students are just talking simultaneously in Japanese, so I didn't bother to bring up the audio. But this is just those collaborative classroom view that we would expect to see. The students are sort of sitting on those what we call islands, and they can use those classroom provided notebooks, and they are talking, and there are lots of sort of activities going on, and the students are kind of freely walking around and discussing. And this is the standard class size that I'm talking about, 80 to 100 students in one class. They may be working that close in one class, and sometimes that those jigsaw are done in that kind of classroom. So this island that they were talking about, presenting their literature study results, and they can hear what's happening in the next island. It's a very kind of a noisy class. But what they can also put out their class results onto the notes during the course and so on. It's a very chaotic classroom that we tend to have. So I'm not running this class all by myself, and there are always, very often, the other teacher would be in the class, but we may be combining two classes, and there are always 3 to 4 graduate level teaching assistants, and who would be taking care of those local problems of the hardness of the discussion or the technical problems and so on. So how do we evaluate the kind of the class that we do? We take performance measures, and we also analyze the process data and what kind of bug that we got and how we analyze those. Do we get more integrated term papers? Yes, we seem to. And students are starting to take up more materials taught in the class as the years goes by. And if we give some two-year comparison taught on junior level cognitive science courses of using the Lego notes, the example case that I talk about here is, I don't have too much time, so I'm going over this very quickly. This is a human problem solving lecture for junior students, and 57 junior students took this class and worked in 23 groups. It's a semester course, and the goal was to understand the fundamental characteristics of human as a problem solver. One third of the course is devoted for the literature study, so the students get separated into groups and take up the topic and do the literature study. And in the middle of the course, they present their literature study to the class, and while that's happening, we ask them to explicitly make those relations. How is that group's presentation related to what you studied? And those link making is explicitly encouraged to be done on the record notes, and toward the end that we would ask them to present to the class again what kind of relations they made to tie those pieces together. But as a comparison, I brought up here today as a 2000 practice of the senior students on cognitive science of learning and development, and the 71 juniors and seniors took this class, but this was done an intensive course session in 3 days, and their goal was to propose and evaluate a new design for a traditional college course based on findings on cognitive science and how people learn. And the first day they did the literature study, and the second day they did relation making, and on the third day they proposed the projects and summary. They had about 10 more days to write up the summary report. And for this course, for 2000 year course, instead of those recognized only style that we brought in, those structured jigsaw, and overall, there are lots of notes made, and the interesting thing is that, well, this is 14 weeks activities, and this is 3 days, but what students do seems to be relatively equivalent. Very quickly, that we can do lots of analysis whether those mutual linking help students to see others' notes, or whether the structuring of the materials ever helped those collaborative knowledge construction, or whether this kind of activity help the student at all to learn the material. We can ask a very simple question like, do the notes with small links get more visit from the other students? Those are the number of the links that the notes got. And there are a number of about over 200 notes which didn't have any notes, but under those reddish bars are the average number of visits. Yes, the more, so this is the more links. So this is the more visits, and this is the 98 results, and we see a very similar pattern for the 2000 year results. We couldn't get this kind of log for 98, but for the 2000 years that we could check whether they use links made by others or they would use their own links only. And toward this is a literature study and relation making and summary writing phase, and during the summary writing that we found that the students are actually relying a lot on links made by other students. Okay, and do the structuring of the material help students to integrate the materials? And we can talk about different linkings. You can link your own note, or you can link your note to the others. But we are also interested in, because of the structure, whether they would start linking others' notes, not bothering your own, but start working on their others' notes as a contribution to the class. This is 98, and this is 200, and this is literature study, this is relation making, and this is summary writing, and those blues are your own notes connection, and reds are your own note to the others. But I want you to take a small look at these white ones. Those are the numbers that they started to make links of others to others' notes, and we do see those jigsaw structure help students start seeing the possibility of or the taking others' notes as your own and start integrating those. And this is the whether this is the quality of the term papers. This is 98 to 2000. This activity do seem to, these are the, well, okay, but not very high quality papers. And this is a middle and this is high. We had a sort of a dichotomy in 98. Students who loved the system really worked well, but we got used to using this system, as the student did too. In 2000, we saw a lot more worked and turned in the better quality papers. Some students started to write very highly integrated papers in 98, but we saw about half of the groups turning in those integrated papers. And if we see what kind of activities those students divided by those report types or engaged during the course, this is a integrated paper writers that who were actively using the relation makings. They were actually sharing the notes and making relations during the relation making course and the summary writing phases. And the 2000 years, we saw that the students are those students who integrated their papers were very highly active during the summary writing courses. This may have to do with the structure that they had only 3 days, so they couldn't do very much during the other time, but they had more time on the summary writing. But because those notes are put on the shareable note system and linked, the student could come back and take advantage of those. As I said, I'm concluding this talk by trying to share with you where we are and what are the problems that we are facing. And we do feel that those curriculums have to be sort of integrated in the way of a better understanding of what kind of student that we want to sort of educate at the college level, or we are just starting to broaden our perspective from focusing your own class to the entire year, to the 4 years in college, and this may be broadened more from the national standpoint to see that what we should be doing for the elementary level to middle school to higher education. But I feel that we are starting to see some need to really see, to really form a better view of seeing a learning as an opportunity for growth in a larger scope, and also that we are renovating and integrating those computer supports, and we are still exploring new types of learning activities. And as you gain more experience and you start seeing more ideas to change your classes and how to run and what kind of activities you would engage your students in, and this kind of environment, that if the environment becomes a little bit better, that we really realize that we are in desperate need to better learning materials. And we do think that we have to redefine goals of learning and what do we really want to teach those students. What should be the conceptual object of knowledge that they should put in their heads when they are ready to go out into the society, and we do not necessarily have the very best ideas on how to do. And all these sort of gets boiled down to, in my case, the realization of keener needs for a better understanding of how people learn, and I am in that sense also behind the wheel of the movement of learning sciences, movement in sort of happening in here and in my country and many Asian countries, as well as in Europe and North American countries. Well, thank you very much. 감사합니다.